Let's go.
You're about to experience action like you've never heard it before. Action sports, celebrities, badasses, and massive interviews. All coming to you from the Polaris Razor Studio. This is Jim Beaver's Project Action, exclusively on Podcast One.
What's happening? This is Jim Beaver. This is Project Action on Podcast One. And, man, we got a special guest lined up for you today, man that wears many hats, author, filmmaker, one of the men behind the viral sensation Sharknado, Gary Morgenstein is going to be my guest on the show today. We're going to be talking baseball, sci-fi, probably Sharknado, and a whole lot more, but really looking forward to having him on the show. It's definitely going to be an interview you do not want to miss. If you're new to the show, I'm just telling you, man, we shoot from the hip here. It's a little of this, a little of that. You never know what's going to drop in, but you know it's going to be epic. That is Project Action. You know, sometimes action sports, sometimes it's motorsports, stick and ball sports. Not just sports. I mean, we go to Hollywood, entertainment, MMA, wrestling, whatever. It's whatever I like. That's what this show is. And Gary Morgenstein, he is the hot ticket today. So, yes, get locked, get loaded. It's going to be one hell of an hour here on Project Action. If you are new to the show, please head over to Apple Podcasts, smash the subscribe button while you're there. And I mean smash it. Hit that enter key hard. Click it on your phone hard. You want to get subscribed to this because we've got some great guests lined up, not only today, but just about every day here on the show. So, yes, go over to do that. Leave a rating or review. Definitely helps us out. And you can give me a follow at JimBeaver15 on social media. I've also got another show. It's called the Down and Dirty Radio Show. If you like motorsports, that's your show. Go and check that out. All those places as well, SiriusXM, and a whole lot more. But yeah, we got a lot of content cranking, and you can get it all when you follow me on social media. But you know what? These shows wouldn't happen without our amazing partners. And we've got one of our amazing partners, our good friends at Meguiar's. You know, car waxes have really come a long way. And over the last few years, Meguiar's has launched the next generation protective products with their hybrid ceramic platform that's specifically geared towards do-it-yourselfers. Yes, DIYers. It all started 2 years back. Meguiar's introduced their hybrid ceramic spray wax. Bright blue bottle. Its advanced SiO2 technology delivers ceramic wax protection and durability beyond traditional waxes. Incredibly easy to use. Simply wash your car, spray on Meguiar's hybrid ceramic spray wax, just rinse it right off. No rubbing, no curing, buffing, or mess. Provides extreme water beating action, and the product has been flying off the shelves, literally with wings flying off the shelves. It's that good. Then last year, knowing some people prefer a more traditional style of application, Meguiar's launched their liquid version, Meguiar's Hybrid Ceramic Liquid Wax. It's long-lasting ceramic protection in an easy-to-use wax. Seals the paint for long-lasting protection against all the elements. Delivers extreme water-beating action. It's easy to use, applying like a traditional liquid wax, and there's no wax residue. Meguiar's also launched a hybrid ceramic spray detailer for in-between boosted maintenance. It removes contaminants like dust, fingerprints, even those evil bird droppings. It boosts gloss and enhances protection. It also includes that SiO2 hybrid ceramic protection. Achieve a just wash look by gently removing fresh contaminants between regular washes before they have a chance to bond. And this year, yes, this year, they've expanded the line, include Meguiar's new hybrid ceramic wash and wax. It's a bright orange bottle, unique two liquid system in one bucket that delivers results like anything you've ever experienced before. It's blended with slick, low sudsing surfactants that gently lift and wash away dirt and grime. Its SiO2 Boost is a wax additive that delivers instant water beading protection. Working in tandem, you get a slick and clean vehicle that beads water like crazy. Optimize your results and washing experience with Meguiar's new hybrid wash mitt. That's a dual-sided mitt for gentle washing and adding booster wax. Meguiar's hybrid wash mitt is sold separately. Now Meguiar's has a hybrid ceramic solution for everyone. For incredible water beating and protection and durability beyond traditional waxes, it is ceramic made easy, Meguiar's. And you know, McGuire's been a great partner on the show. You know what? Another great partner on the show since day one, our good friends at Geico. And you know what? Do you own or rent your home? Well, I'm sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to Geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit Geico.com today. That's Geico.com. Big thanks to Geico. Big thanks to McGuire's. And here, without further ado, is Gary Morgenstein. I'd like to welcome one of my guests this week to Project Action on Podcast One. Acclaimed author. I don't know. We got the we could spend a minute or two, I think, going down the rundown on all your accomplishments. But Gary Morgenstein, welcome to the show, my friend.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I gotta say it's been probably a busy March for you, dropping not only a book but a series. We've got A Fastball for Freedom out. We've got Joyland out. I guess somebody like you, two big ones in 1 month. That means you've got to be pretty busy about now.
And plus, my wife's birthday, so I had to duck that and not mess that up.
Yeah, that was probably the most important one, right?
Yeah, as I told her, yes. But yes, it's been very busy. You know, Joyland is set in the 1960s, and A Fastball for Freedom is set at the start of the 22nd century. So I just have to make sure I know which century I'm in.
Yeah. Well, and I want to jump in and talk about some of the sci-fi in that. But I got to say, I know you're a baseball fan, obviously. Probably one of the few people on the planet that can mix sci-fi and baseball. But, you know, we got all this going on in March. Plus, we got spring training going on. So guys like you and I mean, we really are, we're firing on all cylinders this month.
Well, you're pumped up. You always have to be careful not to get too excited about spring training because, you know, everyone is in the best shape of their lives, right? Their arms are wonderful. Then they're going to recover from, you know, the slump of the past 3 years, at least with the Yankees, with Gary Sanchez. He started out spring training great. And now he's like 0-30. It's like, oh, here we go again. So I'm just waiting for Thursday, opening day, the opening bell. I'm a Yankee fan, but I respect all baseball fans, which given, you know, the issues that the sport has had over the past years, I think it's important to remember that. Yeah. And in my novels, baseball is banned, effectively gets banned because it's associated with treason and more so the old America, the discredited America that led to defeat in World War III.
Well, you know, and this is actually something funny. You know, we'll get into your novels in a minute, but you talking about that. I can remember, and this is funny because I'm from Arizona, so obviously I'm a Diamondbacks fan. You're from New York, you're a Yankees fan, but we go back to 9/11, and you remember as well as I do, that World Series between Arizona and the New York Yankees, probably one of the most watched World Series probably ever. And it really, baseball kind of reunited the country, if you remember back. And I mean, it's hard to believe that that was 20 years ago at this point, but I just remember baseball being kind of a unifying force in this country. And I mean, baseball's always, you know, been a special place in my heart, but I truly, you know, feel like it really is America's pastime, and it serves such an amazing purpose. You go back to, you know, during the World Wars, things like that. I mean, baseball has been a staple in this country for so long, and it means so much to so many people.
Well, absolutely, and I believe 100% of that. I'm sentimental. I love history. And America was the great power when baseball was at its peak. And there's something special about going into a baseball stadium. And I don't want to offend anyone else, any other sports fans, because I have the greatest respect for the sport and the athletes. I love basketball. I'm a recovering Knicks fan. but when you remember your first game as special. And when you walk into a baseball stadium, day or night, I describe it in the novel as you look at the field and it looks like God's front lawn. And it touches you in a way that no other sport, the statistics go back over the generations. I'm sure that there are people out there who could tell me who is the most passing yardage in NFL history. But that doesn't compare with, you know, 56, the numbers like that, or 5'11", or, you know, you're on and on. That we all grew up with. And I think that it's kind of sad with baseball. I agree about it unifying, and I try to lean into that very heavily in the novels, that it fades and it's about to face its final season. It comes back, and it tries to reunite America, which is surrounded on all sides, and ultimately helps to save the world. And I think it's not that there's so much wrong with baseball. Obviously, I could do without 4-hour games. We all could, because we have to go to work and we have to go to sleep. Yeah. But it's more that society has changed, and it's out of step and doesn't have the time for the wonder of, where the outfield is positioned. Jim, one of the most mystifying things for me is how the fielder is so often right there where the ball's hit, right?
Yeah, that goes into the mathematics and the science of baseball, and I know you're obviously a sci-fi guy, but there's so many things when you start looking at a baseball field, and I think, and I've told this to people, there's so many things to analyze. There's so much mathematics that goes on and science with the game and being at the right place in the right time and knowing velocities and looking at the wind, whether you're outdoors, indoors, the density of the air, and obviously, being in Colorado or Phoenix, and people don't realize Phoenix is actually the second highest elevation for a baseball stadium in the country. Oh. But there's so much that goes into it. You know what I mean? And like you said, the guys being in the right place at the right time. I mean, there's so much science that goes into the game. I mean, you can watch on TV and not really grasp what's going on and what's going through the players' minds. And I've always found that just a tremendous part of the game.
But people are too impatient for that now, the young people. You have to answer your text. Was it 8 seconds is the average? Something incredibly scary like that, all the platforms that people could reach you on. No one wants to sit there and take the time to study the game and enjoy the leisurely pace. And that's the splendor of it. I'm going, a buddy just copped 3 tickets through his girlfriend for the Yankees game Monday. And I am so psyched. I don't know how many of us really are allowed. I guess maybe about 10,000 tops. I don't really care. I'm just going to be at a baseball stadium for the first time in 2 years. And it's going to be splendid.
Yeah, well, and like you said, and I put that in perspective, and I'm a massive hockey fan, love football, love that. I'm just a sports guy. But
sure,
there's something, like you had said, the game of baseball, I feel like football, basketball, hockey, all those fields, they're predetermined. Baseball's the only one where it's different. It can be different. You've got, there's various, things that they can do with the parks and things. And I'm an architecture guy too. And every single baseball park is different. And that's what I love. But I get the same feeling walking into a baseball park that I do at Indianapolis Motor Speedway, where you walk in and you just go, man, you're somewhere special. You just feel it, and especially some of the older parks. You start looking at Fenway Park, Yankee Stadium, old Yankee Stadium, they don't play there anymore, but Wrigley Field, places like that have been around for a long time. I mean, you just walk in and there's a feeling you get, walking through the gates, and it's hard to relay that to people who have never felt it.
Well, this could, I consider that Yankee Stadium, Fenway Park, and Wrigley Field are the three cathedrals.
Yes.
In baseball. And they're kind of like holy. And whether you want to root for the teams or not, it really doesn't matter. I revere, the Red Sox history and Fenway Park. But it doesn't matter. It's baseball. It's just special. And it touches a certain chord. And I think, in our society, we need to find something to bring us together. And I think baseball, used to be able to do that. And unfortunately, that's kind of fading away now, which is sad. But I don't care, because I'm going to be a baseball fan like you. Yeah. I'm going down swinging.
Yeah, that is absolutely the truth. So I got to ask, we're going to jump into some of your projects that you've just dropped, but obviously A Fastball for Freedom, that's a sequel to A Mound Over Hell, but I want to jump into this series a little bit, and I got to be honest with you, I just ordered the first book, so I haven't quite read it yet, but I've read up enough on it that it got me excited enough where I went and ordered it. But let's jump into this, because you're one of the few people that could actually bridge sci-fi and baseball, and that's another thing that gets me excited talking to you, because I'm a massive sci-fi guy as well. So I'm like, man, this is hitting all my chords here. But you've got to be a sci-fi guy. I mean, how did you bridge the gap between the two? Because that's got to be really, really tough. I mean, there's a lot of things that people wouldn't think you could do with sci-fi, but you've somehow managed to do it.
Well, I used to work at the Sci-Fi Channel. I was director of PR. And people would come to us and say, I don't really like science fiction. And why? Because they think it's all Star Trek or Star Wars and aliens and spaceships. And I say, well, do you like that book? Do you like that TV show? Do you like that movie? And they go, yeah, well, that's science fiction. And the genre is so broad. Now, dystopian science fiction baseball is not a common genre that I write in. But what I do is I knit it together through world building and creating societies. And at the end of the day, it's all about people. The characters are ordinary people caught up in extraordinary times. And so they're just trying to get through the day, even though the world they live in can be very fearsome. You have an America which lost World War III. Democracy has failed. Capitalism has failed. It's run by an entity called the family, where love and family and friendship are paramount. So, for example, we wouldn't be talking now because all social media, all communication like this, was banned under the anti-narcissism laws. The entertainment business, banks, lawyers were banned under the anti-parasite law. So I create all these worlds and set up the rules and try to link it back to what happens today without being dated. There's no reference to, you know, Donald Trump's third, term or anything like that. In fact, I don't even mention really any current baseball players, because you got to be careful saying someone's going to be in the Hall of Fame. I'm sure that, you know, we all thought Aaron Judge was on his way to the Hall of Fame. Yeah. I think the only contemporary baseball player I mentioned at Fastball for Freedom is Mike Trout, because, I mean, come on, if he's not in Cooperstown, you know, lights out. But you're right, bringing these two worlds together, it's rare that there's science fiction and baseball, because most people who look at the future don't think baseball is going to be around.
Yeah, which is funny, you know, I don't see baseball going away. I do see a regression, unfortunately, of some sorts, you know. But I think at one point, too, you know, this gets into a whole nother thing. You know, you talk about salaries and just how expensive the game has become and things like that. And I think baseball's, you know, in certain ways has become its own worst enemy. But that's a story for another day. But, you know, I don't know. How did you get into sci-fi? I mean, obviously you work with a sci-fi channel. I know you were one of the guys that were behind the PR machine Sharknado, which at this point, I don't know if there's probably not one person walking that has either not heard of the movie or at least not seen it. I mean, that movie, for being on the sci-fi channel, I got to say that got as much PR as any major Hollywood blockbuster. It's crazy. That was just a marketing machine. But how did you get into sci-fi? Was it something that got you as a kid?
Oh, I always loved science fiction. I grew up on the great works of Arthur Clarke and Ray Bradbury. Philip K. Dick was a tremendous influence on me because he was just so mad and he just opened doors. And when you're writing, you want as a writer to be able to someone to show someone else who's established to say, yeah, you can say that, you can go there, because in writing you have to push it, you have to take chances. And I, in my books, I always push the reader to think of it's not that it's so complex with big words and weird, you know, structures. It's very simply laid out, but I think my characters are complicated. And, you know, you might think someone's a bad guy, but they're really not a bad guy. But I just always loved science fiction. And then when I got the job at sci-fi, I was the mad PR genius behind Sharknado. No one believed that it would work. In fact, I'll tell you a quick story. I handled the publicity for the Saturday movies, the B movies, you know, Mothman and, you know, you know, all the strange stuff. And so Sharknado was, you know, a cheesy movie. I think it was made for like $40 or something like that. And it was coming out in July, and in June there were a series of tornadoes in the Midwest which killed the tornado chasing hosts of a Discovery series. So I was told by my masters, maybe we shouldn't do the movie. I said, no, we're going to get good PR for this movie. I said, I don't know, people will think that we're being insensitive. I said, wait a minute, Sharknado is about tornadoes hitting Los Angeles, scooping sharks out of the sky and dumping them on Earth. That's never happened before. I really don't think anyone's going to be insensitive. And I was told not to push it too much, and which I ignored. Being rogue, I said, well, you know what? I think I have a good thing. But Ian Ziering, the star, would not do publicity because he thought it would ruin his career. And Tara Reid did and the director, Anthony C. Ferranti, did a call with the press, and I got some good stuff. And then the night it aired, it blew up the internet. There's no other way to say that. I mean, suddenly Mia Farrow and Philip Roth are tweeting about it. And I got to work. I woke up the next morning. I had to borrow a suitcase from a friend of mine, and I went to her house to pick it up because I was going to Comic-Con in a few days. And she said, "Oh, you know, Sharknado was just on the Today Show." I said, "What?" She said, "Yeah, they're going to do another segment." I said, "What? What are you talking about?" That day, and I was in the business a long time, was the busiest day I have ever had. TMI, I had to make sure that if I went to the bathroom, someone was covering my phones. I had to apportion people to cover all the interviews, and it never stopped for a few years. And I'm very proud that I have two cameos in Sharknado 2 and Sharknado 3.
Yeah, that's, and you know, crazy. And the original Sharknado, correct me if I'm wrong, but it came out kind of before streaming really became streaming, right? I mean, in today's day and age, they'll be able to just go onto the internet and click watch. You can be able to track that. But this was one of those where it aired on TV and everybody that missed it was like, oh, what did I miss? You know, like, I got to see this, you know, and that had to have been one of those where you guys, you know, it was one of those, you're going to air it, you know, you'd have a couple follow-ups probably. And then it was like, oh man, that thing got into rotation. It was there for a long time.
Well, and no one at the channel thought highly of these movies. They thought they were rubbish. So everyone was always turning their noses and smirking at me when I talk about them at meetings. And then suddenly I had a halo. Oh, yeah, you got to do this. You got to do that. And then it built its own momentum because they wanted to get all the stars. Sci-Fi is owned by NBC Universal, by Comcast. So they wanted all these cameos to go into the movies, which kind of weighted down an episode in the third movie. It got a little... I mean, it's hard to say that Sharknado got cartoonish. That sounds redundant, but it kind of lost its way. One was innocent, and I thought the second one, which was in New York, was great. The script called for Sharknado to destroy Yankee Stadium, and the Yankees were too precious about it. They said, "No, you can't destroy Yankee Stadium, even imaginary, even in a movie. We won't allow that." So the Mets said, "Yeah, sure, why not? You know, Trash City Field with CGI." So we filmed it because there were so many delays in filming. We filmed it in February, which, you know, February in New York can be a mite nippy. So we get to City Field for the shooting that morning. It's like 15 degrees and snowing. And you had all these poor people who were told to show up in shorts and tank tops, assuming it was, you know, the scene was going to be set, you know, in the summer. And people like are shivering and turning blue, and then had to find blankets and space heaters. And I said, "Well," they said, "Well, how are we going to spin this?" I said, "Well, it's a Sharknado, so the weather changed." Well, that's a good idea. It was just nuts, and Matt Lauer was not a big fan of doing this. And then he, you know, got so caught up in it on the Today Show, and everyone just was, "Oh, wow, Sharknado. Can I be in Sharknado?" It was very, just incredible, the pop culture insanity. And then it goes all over the world. We had simulcasts all over the world. You know, suddenly it's, you know, Sharknado in Japan. It's like, really? Sharknado, you know, in Egypt. Okay, cool. It was just crazy.
Yeah. There was ended up being like 5-6 movies, right?
Yes, I think there was 6. I had left the network by then, but I believe there were 6 movies. But by then it was getting, I think the last one was they went back in time and they were like fighting Nazis and cavemen and dinosaurs. It was really, you talk about jumping the shark.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Sharknado jumped the shark. Which is, you know,
but in its moment, it was, you know, it was television history.
Yeah, which I've always loved that term just because, you know, and people who don't know it, I'll say that and they'll go, "What are you talking about?" Like, I'm like, "Look up Happy Days when Fonzie jumps a shark." They're like, "Really?" And they're like, "That's a thing." And I'm like, "Yes, it's a thing." That's where it goes back to.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. So let's talk a little bit. We talked a little bit about Fastball for Freedom, your book that's currently out. But let's talk a little bit about Joyland, because we haven't jumped into this. And obviously, you're a basketball fan as well. Give us a little details on this, because I haven't watched this series yet, but I've definitely got it earmarked to start watching tonight. But Joyland, I mean, this, I'm just looking through through this, and it looks like, man, you guys hit on so many things that are, I know this takes place in the 60s, but I feel like it's so, there's so many things you hit on that are still commonplace today in America.
Well, yes. So much of today goes back to, you know, the 60s and was unresolved. The episode 101 begins in July 1964. It's set in New York City primarily. And there's riots in New York because a cop killed an unarmed African-American teen. So there's a lot that went on that we still see. And we look at it, and it's, remember, it's entertainment, and it's drama. And again, it's seen through the eyes of regular people. We also look a lot, obviously, the civil rights issues as well. But we also look at the little guys and the little girls taking on the establishment. For example, one of our main characters, Marty Dent, he's a former Knicks star who got hurt in a mysterious car accident. His career was ended. And he wants to bring a franchise in the upcoming ABA, which will begin in 1967, to Brooklyn. So he has to take on the power brokers. And his best friend is Reverend Julian Bass, an African-American, who's dealing with social justice from his end as head of a church, a fading church, a congregation that's very old, but he wants a seat at the table. So we look at the 60s in the way from the ground up, and we look at the people who had the control and the power. And so that's really what we're looking at. But so much, people have to remember that the 60s, we had a great deal of hope as well. And we tried to lean into that, you know, putting a man, you know, by end of the decade, putting a man on the moon, as we did, ask not what your country could do for you. This was America. This was the great America. We were the richest, most powerful nation on earth. There was nothing we could not do. Yeah, let's go to Vietnam and we'll stop the commies and, you know, maintain democracy. It was just, you know, the Great Society, which was intended to eliminate poverty and end racial injustice. Talk about ambitious goals. It didn't work. But we try to remember through these characters, through these hopeful characters, all with dreams, what it was like back then when, you know, we had leaders like Martin Luther King, and we had leaders, you know, candidates like Bobby Kennedy, John Kennedy. There was a different feeling in the air. A lot went south, but a lot did.
Yeah. Well,
and we produced it on Zoom, by the way. And I just want to mention that because what choice do we have? So, and just briefly, we take the Zoom platform and we try to give some bells and whistles, but we're trying to redesign the way you develop a television series. And I know you're a Star Trek fan, or a science fiction fan. I hope you're a Star Trek fan. So when I say Kobayashi Maru, we're changing the rules or trying to change the rules.
Well, and I think, you know, and this is an interesting concept that gets us down another rabbit hole. But, you know, with everything that happened, you know, in 2020, and obviously we're still kind of pushing through this pandemic. And you know, I think we're starting to see a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel. But I think people that work in media, you know, and I've got national radio and I've got a digital media company, and we've got assets in TV and, you know, and with esports and so many different things. But I think the biggest thing is people have had to get creative. And I think one of the positives, if there's a positive that's come out of this pandemic, is the creativity in media and how people have had to think outside of the box and do things differently. And for that, I'm actually appreciative of the last year, because I think all of us who work in, you know, in these various platforms, we've all had to get creative to be able to produce content and produce things that we were never, you know, that we weren't able to do in our traditional forms. And I think it's kind of cool that you guys are kind of pushing the envelope one way, because I think we've all been forced to, but I think media in the next 2 to 3 years is going to look vastly different than it did pre-pandemic.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, the redoubtable spirit of humanity. It's remarkable what we will overcome, which is why we're all still here. But Zoom, you know, amid the horror, Zoom really has helped unite people, and especially in entertainment. We have actresses in London. We have actors in Los Angeles, Chicago. None of these people would have got together to put together Joyland. I also write plays, and we have audiences. You know, we recently had a Zoom production of my play in England. There's going to be one in Los Angeles, another in Washington. There's something, you know, we were able to keep in touch. And Zoom, it started a lot for entertainment. for theater, for plays, but it's really not theater per se. It's kind of film, but it's really not. It's got a little audio drama because you have stage directions. It's its own thing, and I think it's going to stay around. I really do.
You know, and it's funny, I'm actually a big fan of theater and meaning plays and things like that. I was just in Seattle last week, and I knew the theaters were going to be closed, but I went onto their websites anyways just to see what they were doing, and, you know, hoping randomly that they were actually, you know, open for people to come in and watch. But, you know, theaters around the country have stayed in business by selling digital tickets and things like that, and doing live production stage shows, but, you know, selling digital tickets, you can tune in online. And I think it's kind of remarkable because, you know, somebody like me who enjoys that, now I can see plays from all over the country and I can do it, you know, sitting at home, which, you know, a year and a half ago, that would have never been possible.
Right. And it's sports. Theater to people, you know, America has theater, but we're not like England.
Yeah.
We don't revere it in the way that England does. And I think theater has not been in the 21st century. And I think Zoom has brought theater grudgingly into the 21st century. And people, like you say, who otherwise would not see theater, who, you know, can't afford $300 tickets to Broadway, much less, you know, the gouging of hotels, right? And flying in. They're able to see theater, which is wonderful. It introduces an entire generation to the possibilities of theater, which I think is going to stick around.
Yeah, and I agree. I think it's, you know, I've seen an upswing in theater the last year, and you know, and I saw it, honestly, it's kind of a, you know, and obviously I'm small market, but, you know, things kind of trending upwards. And I think it's one of those where people, if you ever bring somebody to a theater to watch, and even if they're not a fan before, they leave a fan, because to see somebody live acting in front of you, I think anybody, even if you don't know the nuances of it, you can appreciate what you're watching and seeing, you know. And I think you watch TV and you don't see that. You watch a movie, you don't see that. But when you see people acting in front of you, and it really is remarkable.
Yes, I don't know how they do it. Honestly, that's why I'm a writer. I hide behind my words. Yeah, my play, A Black and White Cookie, was supposed to premiere last March. You know, Man Plans and God Laughs. So we got canceled a few days before premiere. So that's why I decided this year to Zoom it. Because, you know, what am I going to wait for? When theater, who knows when theater is coming back to New York, and in what shape and form, and how many people will feel comfortable going. So at the end of the day, you want to reach people. And if you're an artist, a writer, whatever, you want to touch them and tell your story. And whatever the way. And if you're not making money, well, then, you know, it's kind of like going back to the old sitting around a campfire, Jim. It's just telling the story. And what about, you know, broken down to its simplest form? It's kind of special. Think about, you know, when parents would read stories to kids. It's there's a magic there that has kind of been recaptured in its own way.
Yeah. Well, before we let you go, I'm going to put you on the spot in a fun way. I never put you on the spot in a bad way. But I know you're obviously a sci-fi fan at this point. Give me, say, three bits of sci-fi out of last decade, movie, TV, that have been some of your favorites, you know, favorite shows or shows, TV shows or movies, any two or three out of the last decade that stick out in your head?
Oh, I think The Man in the High Castle would certainly rank up there. I think they're also the reboot of Star Trek. I thought they did it wonderfully. And I'm a Trekkie, as you can tell from referencing Kobayashi Maru and James Kirk's adventures at the Starfleet Academy. And I think that shows the strength of that story. Yeah, those two come to mind.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you mentioned the reboot of Star Trek, because I've watched the original Star Treks, and I got to say, like, I'm a fan, but I wasn't a diehard Trekkie. But the reboot really sucked me in, and they've done it phenomenally. You know, and it was actually another reboot that's is one of my favorites, and I was a big fan of the original movie Tron from the early 80s, and the reboot of Tron about 10 years ago. Obviously, it didn't do well in theaters because they scratched the series, but that reboot was phenomenal too. And there's been a few reboots done really, really well the past decade. And for the longest time, people were scared to death of reboots. Don't do it. Don't do it. But I think we've seen that they can work now.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the Lord of the Rings series on Amazon, which is going to be a prequel to those novels. And it's a similar, I don't even know how to say, the Silmarillion, I think. I know I'm mispronouncing a Tolkien's prequel to Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. I think that's going to be cool.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that's what's funny, too, is, like, I'm actually, you know, I'm a big Star Wars fan as well, but the Mandalorian series that they launched on Disney Plus, that's been amazing. It's actually, I like it better than most of the more recent Star Wars movies. I'm like, they just did an amazing job with that series, you know, and it's, you know, in these bite-sized chunks, but they did a phenomenal job. But I love that these studios are starting to think a little bit outside of the box on reboots and side stories and going down these paths and things like that, because guys like you and I that love this stuff, you know, it just gives us more content and more backstory.
Yes, they have to open it up. They have to open up the doors. Maybe through this pandemic, when they reopen, they will.
Yeah. So Fastball for Freedom and Joyland. Joyland online, Fastball for Freedom in bookstores across the country. I guess I still enjoy going to bookstores, so I say that. But I'm sure a lot of people watch it or read it digitally. But where can people get their hands on both of these?
Well, Joyland is at YouTube, at our channel, Joyland, a new series. We already have more than 1,000 views and 1,100 views of our trailer in just a week, which is cool. And Fastball for Freedom, the usual suspects, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, bookshop.org, or just walk into your bookstore. I'm like you. I can wander in a bookstore for a very long time. It's a beautiful thing. And they'll order it for you.
Awesome. Well, Gary, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. I definitely would love to have you back on at some point to talk some more sci-fi and baseball and books and who knows what else. But it's been a pleasure having you on the show today.
Thank you so much, Jim. You take care.
Well, big thanks to Gary for calling into the show. What a great guest. I would love to have him back on sometime very, very soon. Man, I feel like we left off there, and there's a whole hell of a lot more that he and I should and could be talking about, that's for sure. But, you know, don't forget, before we leave you, if you own or rent your home, well, bundling policies with GEICO is where it's at. GEICO makes it easy to bundle your homeowners and renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, see how much you could save. It's GEICO easy. Visit GEICO.com today. That's GEICO.com. And don't forget, Meguiar's now has a hybrid ceramic solution for everyone for incredible water beating and protection and durability beyond traditional waxes. It's ceramic made easy, Meguiar's. And yes, give me a follow at Jim Beaver 15 on social media. Go and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts. And I think, you know what? We're going to sign off for this week. We'll see you next time right here on Project Action on Podcast One.
This week on Bowling with Favre, we got the legendary Dr. Phil.
Hey, this is Dr. Phil. Check out Bowling with Favre on any platform that you listen to your podcast. You do not want to miss it.
And coming up on next week's show, Tuesday the 30th, we're joined by rock legend and always outspoken, my friend, Ted Nugent. Subscribe now everywhere you get your podcasts or stream the show for free at podcastone.com.